My dad's a funny kid. My answer. What was the question?
What is the most
thing? You know the answer is?
Bullshit.
And spaceship. And spaceship was good. Yeah. That was so good.
Okay, so while we wait for this thing to start up, so a couple announcements. Last time I was discussing the lab, and some people at the very end asked if you could go ahead and sort the output of each of the reduced threads and print a globally sorted inverted index. So I'm going to make that an optional part to the assignment. Okay? So you can do that as an option. And if you do that, you'll get a small amount of extra credit for putting in the work. You don't have to. Okay? So my suggestion is that you first get the required part done and done right. Don't try to do a half-baked job of the required part and do something that is optional and then lose points on both. Okay, but if you're really interested and you want to do this extra thing, then I will let you and actually assign some credit for doing that extra work. So I'm going to post that on the lab. Okay. I presume you have all started on the lab because it is definitely more involved than the first one. So if you haven't, please get started soon. It's due next week. Okay. I cannot give any more time because we have an exam that's coming up soon after that. Yes, I don't want a lab that is due very close to the exam. Okay? Alright, so there is still some chocolate left. I'm the only one who seems to be eating it. So, so if you want, pick one up at the end of the class. Okay? Alright, so we'll continue our discussion on synchronization. This is going to be the last lecture on synchronization, and then we will start talking about deadlocks and other topics. So today is going to be a shorter class because I wasn't sure I would actually make it in time. I was actually on a plane all night. I just got in a few minutes back. So I had fewer slides than usual. So what I will do today is actually talk about two synchronization problems. One is called the reader-writer problem and the other one is called the dining philosophers. These are general problems that you encounter frequently in practice when you do synchronization. Okay? We have already seen the producer-consumer problem. Okay? That is one important class of synchronization problem that occurs frequently, and you are actually using the notion of producer-consumers to do inverted index, okay? Using MapReduce. That's just one instance of how you can use that to solve real problems. These are some other instances. Okay, so we'll start with reader-writers and then we will look at dining philosophers. Okay, so what is the reader-writer problem? So here again we have an object. Okay, it's a data structure that is shared between threads. Okay, threads want to access this data structure. Okay, now in general the way you would do this is to protect this data structure with a lock or a semaphore. Okay, some or monitors for that matter. And then any thread, once it is accessing this object, blocks all other threads from accessing it within the critical section. That's how you would normally implement it. Okay? Now the reader-writer's problem is a special case of this more general problem where you can do better. Okay? And the reason is as follows. So it is assumed that each thread can only do one of two types of access, okay, either read access or write access. Okay? So any thread that wants to access this object is either a reader, which means it's only going to read this data structure, read this array or whatever this data structure is, but never modify it. Okay? Or you can have a writer which can only modify it, okay, and optionally read it, but it's really modifying it. So if you could partition your threads that are accessing this object into two categories, the reader threads and the writer threads, the question is, can you do better in terms of synchronization? Okay. So the point is, in this case, in this special case, using a single lock for the entire object is overly restrictive. Okay. And the reason is, if you have a reader thread that is accessing that object, there is no reason to block other readers from also reading it because the object values are not changing. Okay? So as many readers can read it in parallel as they want. Okay? There is no reason for one thread to block other readers. Okay, so you want concurrent reads to happen. Okay, but if there is a writer thread that is modifying the object, you want to block everyone else. Okay, this is like what would have happened in the normal lock case, where if a thread is accessing it, everyone else is blocked. You want that property only if you have a writer thread modifying the object. Because you are modifying it, you don't want anyone to read it while you are modifying it. Neither do you want another writer thread to come and modify it. Okay? So now you want basically this type of access control, which is, it is a shared data structure. It is protected by a lock, but this lock needs to do two different things. If there is a reader that's accessing the object, it can let other readers come in and access the object at the same time. But if there is a writer that's modifying that object, you want that lock to block everyone else. Okay, so you want to have this property. So that what I just said is specified here as the correctness criteria, saying both reads and writes should happen within a critical section, meaning they should be protected. Okay, you want to guarantee mutual exclusion for writers. This essentially means only one writer at a time, but you want multiple readers to be in the critical section. Okay. And as you can see, if you just use the normal lock, you will have an overly restrictive version. You will get the first and the second property, but not the third. Okay. This will reduce the parallelism you can actually get in your system. So what we'll now look at are solutions of the reader-writer problem, which use some notion of mutual exclusion, but allow multiple readers and a single writer. Okay, problem clear? Yes, no? Okay. So here is our first attempt at doing the reader-writers. So here we have a class. There are two methods. There's a read method and a write method. And the objective is you want multiple threads to be in the read method. Okay. But if multiple threads to be in the read method, and if there is some thread in the write method, then no thread can access either the read or the write. Okay? Now you can see that if you had a Java class and you put the keyword synchronize there, you will be back to your overly restrictive solution. So you can't do that. So even in Java, you want to do this differently. This is just pseudocode. Doesn't matter which language it is. I'll show you a Java version of the solution. Okay? So here we are going to use semaphores to solve the problem. There's a mutex semaphore, which is essentially a lock, and there is a write semaphore, which controls access to the first reader or the writer. Okay? So initially, initialize the number of readers to 0. Okay, the lock is available, the write semaphore is also initialized to 1. Okay. So here is the write class. Okay. What the write class does is it does a wait on that semaphore, okay, which means if there is any other reader or the writer, this write is going to block. Okay. So if you are a write thread, if there are readers already reading, you have to wait for them to finish. You can't go and start modifying. Okay. And similarly, if there is some other writer, you have to wait. Because you can be the only thread modifying it, you have to wait for all other readers to exit, as well as any, if there is a writer, that writer needs to exit. Okay? So you will do a wait there. Okay? If you are the first writer, then because you initialize this semaphore to 1, okay, you will be granted access to this object. Okay? But if there is any other writer or reader for that matter, you will block them. So eventually you will come out of the way, it will perform the write and you will do a signal. So the write method is very simple. It is basically just doing a wait on a semaphore, okay, performing the write and then doing a signal. Okay. It's the read method that needs to be more complicated, because you have to let multiple readers in. You can't just protect it with a lock which only allows one reader. Okay. So what you do is you basically do a mutex and then you increment the number of readers. Okay. And then you check if the number of readers equals 1, that means you are the first reader to have entered. Okay, because you started with 0 readers. Okay, and you increment each reader that comes in, increments this counter, okay, which keeps track of how many reader threads are currently executing. Okay. If you are the first reader, then your job is to ensure that all writers are blocked. Okay. So you will do a wait, which will decrement this semaphore, bring it down to 0. Okay, subsequently, if a writer arrives and it does a wait, the value of the semaphore will go negative and block. Okay. So this essentially says, if I'm the first reader, make sure all writers are blocked from this point on. Okay. If you are the subsequent reader, you don't have to do this, because the first reader would have already done it. All you do is you increment the counter, saying I'm yet another reader that has entered this method. Is that clear? Okay. So then all you have to do is you do a signal. So this is the lock. Okay, that you are basically accessing the reader, which is a shared variable. So you just protected that by a lock. So you release that, you perform the read. Okay. Once you are done with the read, then you do the opposite. You decrement the number of readers. Just a second. You decrement the number of readers. If you are the last reader to exit, okay, you again see if the number of read count has gone to zero. If you are the last reader, then you have to re-enable writers because some may be blocked. So you will basically do a signal. Okay, here you block the writers with a wait. Here you did a signal. So if there was some writer waiting there, this signal would cause that to come out of the wait and start doing the write. Okay, yes, you have a question.
No.
Is this logic clear, what is happening here? Okay. So essentially in the read, so the important thing is in the read, there is no real lock protecting the read at all. Okay. You, as many readers as possible can just enter and just do the read. All you are doing is you check if you are the first reader, block the writer. If you are the last reader, re-enable writers. Okay, and then it's basically all readers have a free for all. They can just enter and do the read. So there is no mutual exclusion here. Okay. For on the write, for the write on the other hand, you do have mutual exclusion. That's basically a write log. That's if I'm the writer, I have to get hold of that semaphore. And if some reader is in the system, it will block me, or some other writer may block me. And only if I'm the only writer can I go in and perform the write. Any questions on this? Is this clear? Does it work? Any problems with this solution? Yes.
So, if there is an infinite reader, the writer will not be there.
Okay, that's a good point. So, if there is always some reader in the system, okay, the writers will be blocked. Okay, because if the first read, let's say the first thread to come in is a reader, you increment the read count, you go in. Okay? And then before you exit, another reader comes in. Okay, some writer might come and block there, but if there are continuous stream of readers entering the system, writers are blocked. Okay? So this solution essentially favors readers over writers. So the solution is correct. It is not going to violate any of the correctness properties that we listed here. Okay? So safety is not violated. Nothing bad will happen. The only thing that might happen is liveness, which is starvation of the writers. So if there are lots of readers, writers might be starved. Okay, that's a potential problem with the solution. So what can we do about it? Is the problem clear why you can get starvation? Okay. Okay, so before we actually try to solve that problem, let's look at a couple of scenarios here to see what might happen. Okay? Here there are two reader threads, R1 and R2, and there's a writer thread. Okay? Assume that the axis is time going that way, which means the first reader comes, does calls the read method, and R2 comes, thread R2 does this, and then this one. So we have to ask who gets to go and who gets to wait. Okay? So R1 does a read. What does that do? Okay. It increments the read count. The read count has gone from 0 to 1, first reader. Okay. Then you basically say, am I the first reader? Yes. Okay. And then you will go and block this writer. You will decrement the semaphore. Okay. So the write semaphore has gone from 1 to 0 by doing that wait. So write was 1. Okay. By doing this wait, the write semaphore is now at 0. Okay. You will go and you will now perform the read. Okay. Second reader comes in. So what happens now? Okay, so you go in here, you increment the read count again. Okay, readers, read count has gone to 2. You check, are you the first reader? You are not. So you don't do anything with this wait. Just go and perform the read again. Okay, so let's assume the readers are still in the read method. A writer comes in, okay, calls the write method. Okay, so what will happen? You will go and do a wait. Okay, what's the value of that semaphore? Okay, it will decrement one more time. Okay, the first time it went here, when you did a wait here, it went from 1 to 0. Okay, you do another wait, it will decrement it further, it will become minus 1. Okay, which will cause that writer to block. Okay, so that writer is waiting, both the readers are here. doing the readers executing some. So let's say the first reader goes out, so it decrements the read count. Read count goes from 2 to 1. You check, are you the last reader? You're not. The read count is still non-zero. So you just, the first reader just exits. Okay. And then the second reader goes and does the same thing. It decrements the read count again. Okay. So the number of readers is now zero. So you check, am I the last reader in the system? Okay. You are the last reader. So then you do a signal. Okay. This write signal causes that writer which is blocked on that read to unblock. So then the reader exits and the writer goes in, performs the write, and then you are done. Okay, so the two readers go in first, the writer is waiting until the two readers finish, and then the writer gets to write. Okay, so here is another scenario where the writer actually enters first, okay, and the two readers come in later. Okay, so the writer has entered the system, so what's going to happen here? You do a wait. Okay. So now what happens? Okay, so you basically decrement the write semaphore. It goes from 1 to 0. Okay, and that's fine. That doesn't cause you to block. So the writer goes in and starts performing the write. Okay, so writer is in doing the write. Reader comes in. The first R1 comes in, does a read. Okay, what's going to happen now? Sorry?
The value of the.
Right. So you will go and increment the read count. You're the reader, number of readers has gone from 0 to 1. Okay. You check, are you the first reader? You are. So you will go and do write.wait. Okay. What will this do? Will decrement the semaphore further. The writer has already decremented it to 0. Okay? You go and decrement it further. Okay? So it becomes negative. Okay? What does that do? Okay? It blocks the reader. Okay? Because the value of the semaphore has become negative. And that's what you want. Because as a writer actually doing a write, you don't want this reader to proceed. Okay? The reader has come in, but the writer is still doing a write. So if you are the first reader, you can block any subsequent writers, but if there's already a writer, then you yourself block here, waiting for the writer to finish, because you are a reader, you can't enter until the writer is done. That clear? Yes, question.
How is it not to block itself? If it's saying to block the
writer. No, this is just a comment, so ignore the comment. See, just look at the logic of the code. So that first wait, the writer came in, it did a wait. Okay? Wait will take the decrement the semaphore. Okay? Initially the semaphore was 1. Okay? The writer decremented it to 0. So long as it is greater than or equal to 0, nothing is happening. You are not blocked. So the writer gets to go in and it's performing the write. It has actually made the semaphore go to 0. Okay? The reader comes in here, okay, so you are the first reader, okay, and then you do a wait again. Okay, this causes that semaphore to actually become negative. Okay? So you will actually block as a result of that. That's what happens. Okay? So for R1 is blocked here. Okay? So now, sorry, writer is still doing its write. R1 is blocked. R2 comes along, calls the read method. Okay, so now what is happening here? Let's look at the code. Let's assume that R1, the writer is still working, not done, yes. Right. So, the reader is going to come in and do a mutex wait. Okay. R1 already holds that lock. Then R1 was actually blocked here. So, R2 will actually block here. It will not even get the lock to increment the reader. Okay. So, the first reader, if there is a writer in the system, the first reader blocks here. All subsequent readers block there. They all try to get the mutex lock and then they block because the first reader is blocked here still holding the lock. Okay, is that clear? Okay. So then subsequently, let's say the writer is done. The writer is going to do a signal here. Okay. This signal will unblock the reader because the reader was blocked here. So that will increment the count. Say, is there some thread waiting? R1 is waiting on this semaphore. R1 is unblocked. R1 comes out of the wait, it does a signal, okay, and then it starts doing a read. When it does a signal here, R2 unblocks, because this signal will cause any thread waiting on this semaphore, the mutex semaphore, to unblock. R2 is actually waiting on that semaphore. So R2 gets to go in here, increment the read count, and then it also goes and does the write, the read. Okay, is that clear? What's happening here? Okay, this doesn't address the problem of starvation. All it's saying is that if there's one writer, it's blocked all other readers. If there's at least one readers, other readers can come in, but the writer is blocked. Okay, that's what we want. That said, the problem is still one where you're favoring readers over writers. So if there are lots of writers, then you will never, writer will never get to, if there are a lot of readers, a writer cannot proceed. Okay. So last scenario, okay, same problem. So R1 grubs does a read. Okay. So it goes in, it increments the read count. Okay, it goes to 1, you are the first reader. You go and decrement the semaphore, thereby blocking all writers. Okay. And then you go in and you do a read. Okay. That's fine. So the R1 is entered into the critical section. Okay. And then W1 comes along. Okay. And does a calls write. Okay. And it will do a write, wait, and block. Okay. Because you have decremented the semaphore here, it's 0. So you do another wait, it becomes negative, you will block. So R1 is doing a read, W1 is blocked, okay, because there's a reader, so you can't proceed. So the writer is blocked, and here is R2 that came in. Here is R2 that came in after W1. Okay, and what happens? Does it wait or does it get to do a read? Gets to read. Okay, you just have to look at the code. So you will do a mutex wait, fine, you will increment the read count. Read count goes to 2, and then you are not the first reader, you don't do anything, you get to perform the read. So this example is actually illustrating the problem of starvation, which says that if there is a reader, okay, that's already in the system, it will block a writer that comes in after it. Okay. R1 is in, okay, it blocks W1. Okay. But any reader that comes after the writer still gets to go in. Okay. And so this means if there is a constant stream of readers coming in, that writer will never proceed. Okay. If you had a fair reader-writer implementation, you would have said, this thread came in before this thread. Why is this getting to go in? Okay. You should actually allow that write to proceed and then let all the readers to go in. Okay, that would be a fair implementation, but this implementation doesn't do that. Okay, it just lets readers go in and just blocks the writers. Okay, so now let's look at, so this is basically what I just described. Okay, so you want some alternative semantics. So all this is saying is that you have unfairness in the system. Okay, the readers are favored over the writers, so you want some way to balance this. Okay, so now here is another solution that favors writers. Okay, so this looks more complicated than it is. So there are multiple mutexes here. So what you do is there's a read count and there's a write count. So you track how many readers have entered the system and how many writers have entered the system. And you do different things. So the first writer can go in, increment the write count. Okay, and then the write count, if you are the first writer, then you are going to block all readers. Okay, and that's what you want. Okay, so you will basically do a wait on that semaphore block, okay, and then you will get a mutex here, okay, and you perform the write. Okay, so this write here is actually protected by a lock. Note that in the read case, okay, the read was not protected by any locks. You would allow as many readers as you want, but in the write case, you want only one writer. Okay, so you will actually protect this with a lock. Okay. And then what you do is here, you will decrement the number of writers. If you are the last writers, then you will enable the readers. Okay. and then this is this is the reader code. So the only difference here is if a reader comes in after a writer has entered the system, even if there may be other readers already doing a read, you block, okay, to allow to prevent starvation. So you have this write pending wait, which says that at most one reader will go in before a pending write. Okay. So if some writer comes in, okay, not only will this writer block all subsequent readers, it will also all subsequent writers, it also makes the readers block. Okay. Otherwise this readers would go in and starve the writer. Okay. So that's the big change here. Okay. So you will check for that condition explicitly. The rest of it is the same. You have the read count, you check if you are the first reader, then you basically block the writers, and then you do a read here, then the opposite. Then this is where you will signal that pending write, saying I'm done. Okay. So the net result of this is this, in this solution, okay, this scenario, R1 will go in, okay, start doing the read, W1 will come and block, okay, because there's still a reader in the system, but because there's now a pending writer, R2 will not get to go in. Okay. As many readers as possible can go in before the first writer arrives. As soon as the writer arrives, then subsequent readers are blocked. Okay, is that clear? What happened? So let's say R1, so you had R1, it goes in, R2 comes, it gets to go do a write, R3 comes. So you can have arbitrary number of reads there. But the moment there is a writer, so this is concurrent reads. The moment there is a writer, in the interest of fairness, any subsequent readers have to wait, saying, look, there's a writer here. If you go in because these readers are still reading, then this might stop. So you will basically, this writer will also block all of these. Then wait for these readers to finish. It will do its write, and then all these writer readers that were waiting will all get to go in. Okay? So readers get to go in, but each writer will basically block all subsequent readers until its own writing is done. Okay. That's essentially what the new solution does. Any questions on this? Okay, so I will skip these scenarios, but I would encourage you to work it out. Okay, so to convince yourself that this works. Okay. Instead, let me talk a little bit about doing this in Java. This is the Java version of the same thing. Okay. So there are these are the read methods, and I guess the next thing is the write method. So let's look at, so this is the class, you keep track of the number of readers, you keep track of the number of writers. Okay. Initially both are zero. Okay. So this is your read method. Okay. This is what you call in order to read. You should realize that this is not synchronized. If you put a synchronized here, you will ensure that there is only one reader in the system. Okay, so you can't make this synchronized. So you want all the threads to enter. So this method is not synchronized. Okay. But what you do here is then you call this prepare to read, which is that method there. Do the reading and then you call it done reading. Okay. And prepare to read basically just checks if there is some writer that has already arrived. Okay. It will wait. Okay. This is the same solution that I showed you in the previous slide, now written in Java. Okay. So if this is the case, you are this thread, okay, and some writer has already entered the system, then you wait. Okay, that's essentially what that is. If the number of writers is greater than zero, you wait. Okay, and then if you are done waiting, then if there are no writers, then you just increment the read count and enter and start doing the reading. Okay. And in done reading, you decrement the number of readers. For the last reader, then you do a notify to your write thing, I'm done. Okay, is that clear? Any questions on this? The read method? Okay, two important things. This method is not synchronized to allow multiple readers to enter. These two methods are synchronized. Okay, why should these two methods be synchronized?
And add num reader to the value.
So why should it be synchronized?
So you don't have a race machine.
Right. Yes. Right. So these two counters, the number of readers and number of writers, are shared variables. They are shared counters that any read thread and any write thread can access. Okay? So if you are either reading it or you are modifying it, you want that to happen in a critical section. Okay? Which is exactly why these two methods are synchronized. Okay? Also, there is a condition variable there. That wait is not, this is not a semaphore, this is a condition variable. This says that if the number of writers is greater than zero, then go to sleep. So for that you need a lock. So for these two reasons you need those methods to be synchronized. They are protecting shared variables. The shared variable is not the shared object itself. These are the counters. Those are that are protected by the synchronization methods. Okay, is that clear? Any questions on that? Okay, so here is your writers. Okay, that's prepare to write. And then there's done writing, and this is the write method. Note that this is synchronized. Okay? Because you want to allow only one writer at a time, so you just protect the write method itself with a lock. And in the read method, you did not do this to allow multiple readers to enter. Okay? So this synchronize ensures that if some writer calls this method, all other writers will be blocked. So you will actually synchronize this, but so the synchronize implies only one writer, then you do the same thing. You do prepare to write, do the writing, then you say call done writing. Prepare to write just increments the write count, saying I am a writer thread. Okay. And then it checks, is there some reader in the system already? Okay. If some readers have entered, so if you are here, okay, some readers are already in the system, they are incremented the read count, then if you are a writer thread, you have to block. Okay. That's what that does. Number of readers is not equal to zero, then you wait. Is that clear? What just happened? So this take that statement that takes care of this scenario. If you are this write thread and there are these readers in the system, the read count is not going to be zero. Okay, and clearly you cannot proceed until the readers are done. Okay, so you will wait them. Okay, but once they are done, then you will basically enter. Okay, so which is why there was a signal somewhere here. Okay, if the number of readers is zero, then you call that notify, which will unblock this writer, okay, because it was doing a wait. Okay, and then the done writing just says, I decrement the write count, and then I call a notify to wake anyone up. Okay, so this will wake either other writers or these readers that might have blocked that came in after it. That's what that notify will do. Okay, is that clear? So the important thing is, here you have a synchronized keyword that only allows one writer to go in at a time. So then the question is, why are those two methods not synchronized? In the read case they were synchronized, but in the write case they are not. Okay.
Who replies it when they're only called if you
manage to get into some way and instead of the right. So they are private methods. That's number one. These were private also, okay, but that's not as important. The important thing is, if you have already synchronized this parent method, you already hold a lock. There is no reason to make that synchronized. In fact, if you make that synchronized, you will deadlock. You will try to grab a lock that you already hold and you will never proceed. Okay. So you should never have a synchronized method call another synchronized method. Okay, this will not be a correct code, because if you are in a synchronized method, by definition you already hold the lock. So you call another synchronized method that tries to reacquire that lock, you are going to block. Okay. So since you already hold the lock, and you are calling that method from in here, there is no reason to make that synchronized. It's already synchronized, because the parent method is synchronized. Okay. Is that clear? Yeah, these are just some subtleties you need to realize, otherwise you get the code that doesn't work. So point is, these are still shared variables, numReaders and numWriters, but because you synchronize the parent method, you are already guaranteed mutually exclusive access, so you don't need to make those methods synchronize in addition. Okay, you are already synchronized by virtue of the parent method being synchronized. Okay. So it's the same code that I showed you, the previous one was C++, this is Java, so they do essentially the same thing. This uses condition variables and monitors. The previous version used semaphores. Okay, that was the only difference between the two. Okay, any questions on readers, writers? Is this easy to understand? Yes? No, it's not. Yes.
If there's a lock, won't readers stay constant?
If the
we're already within the thing that I connected, then won't some readers stay constant because we're within a lock?
True. So I didn't follow what the question is.
If it is a total, this is an automatic lock, so I don't think it distinguishes between readers and writers.
Yes.
So how would the number of readers ever reduce if your system is being called from within the lock?
This is the writer. Okay, this only modifies the number, the write count, not the read count.
I know, but the synchronized keyword only locks the resources that are directly referenced from the method.
No, the synchronized keyword gets you a lock.
It gets you a lock.
And it ensures that any other method that synchronized, those methods are called, they will be blocked.
Okay, so
if there's a writer that's entered here by virtue of being synchronized, another reader comes along, okay, it calls prepare to read. Okay, prepare to read is synchronized, so that reader will just block right there. Okay, so it doesn't even get to do anything because the writer is holding the lock, so the readers will block there.
Alright.
Yes? Okay. Okay, so the point I was making is, yes, this is a solution to the reader-writer problem, okay, but it's not easy to understand. There are all these subtleties. Which synchronized keywords block whom, and when you do a notify, who gets unblocked and so on and so forth. Okay. So, to make it much easier for you to do reader-writers, okay, most synchronization libraries actually support a version of lock called read-write locks. So you don't have to write all of this code. Okay. If you want to implement reader-writer, you actually just use a read-write lock. Okay. A read-write lock basically just says, I mean, it's essentially a lock, and it does the right thing for you. So if you are a reader, all you will basically do, so here is the Java implementation of reader write. So there's a lock class, it's called a read write lock class, okay, which is basically a inherited class from the lock, the generic lock class. It has two types of lock method. Okay. The standard lock thing has a just, the standard lock method has basically a lock and an unlock method. In the case of a read-write lock, you have two types of lock. You can get the lock in read mode, or you can get the lock in write mode as is shown here. Okay. And this does the right thing for you. So if you want to acquire the lock in read mode, we just call read lock. Okay. And this automatically ensures that multiple threads called read lock, they all get to go in. Okay. They all grab the lock. And then if you're a writer, you just ask for the write lock, or you ask for the lock in write mode. This automatically does everything that we just talked about on the previous thing, which is if there are readers in the system, you will block here. If you are the first writer, you will get to go in, okay, and thereby you will block all other writers and readers. Okay. So this interface automatically gives you what we implemented on the previous. Yes.
So this way you don't have to use monitoring. You don't have to say the word system.
No. So this is actually a lock class that does the right thing for you. This is a special type of lock called a read-write lock. So what this does, a normal lock says only one thread can grab the lock at any time. And if some thread has grabbed the lock, everyone else is blocked. A read-write lock says as many threads or arbitrary number of threads can grab the read lock, right, and thereby block all writers. Or if there's one writer thread that has grabbed the lock in write mode, then it blocks everyone else. Okay. It's a special type of a lock that does everything we were talking about. So if you want to do reader writers, you typically don't do this. You just use this interface to get the property you want, which is concurrent reads, mutually exclusive writes. That's essentially what these locks give you. Okay, normal locks are always mutually exclusive. Here, when you get the lock in read mode, you do concurrent locks. In C or C++, you use pthreads, which does essentially the same thing. There's a thing called a read write lock, okay, which is again a special type of a lock. Okay. So you can always get the lock in read mode, or you can get the lock in write mode. Okay. Multiple threads can acquire the lock in read mode. Only one thread can acquire the lock in write mode at any point, and then it will block everyone else. Okay. And then once you're done, you just call the generic unlock method, which will unlock it regardless of which mode you hold the lock in. Okay. Special type of a lock, you can get, acquire it in read mode or write mode to give you that property. Okay, is that clear? So this is basically a method that does, I mean not a method, rather a class that essentially does that for you. Okay, so if you want concurrent readers, then you use this version of the lock, not your normal lock. Yes, question there. Can they starve other threads? So this is Java's implementation. So hopefully they have done the right thing inside to ensure fairness. Otherwise, yes, if you do it the naive way which I showed you initially, you will have starvation. Okay. So these are standard implementation. They have taken extra precautions, and the code is probably has more complexity to ensure fairness. Okay. So you will get better behavior, not starvation. Any questions here? Okay. So what we'll do next is look at the next problem. This is called the dining philosopher's problem. Okay. I don't know if you have heard of this problem before. So the basic, this is sort of more of an abstract description of the problem. And the problem is as follows. It says, so you have this group of philosophers that basically do one of two things. Actually, one of three things. They sit around a table. Okay, this version has five philosophers. Okay. So these philosophers do one of two things. They can either eat or they can think. Okay, while they're thinking, they don't eat. While they're eating, they don't think. Okay. So they keep thinking, then they get hungry, and then they want to eat, and then they go eat, and then they go back to thinking. And there's a special thing they have to do to eat, which is they have a table, they have a plate of spaghetti in front of them, and there are two forks. Okay? And they need to eat with two forks, not one. Okay? So in order to eat, so if you basically switch from your thinking mode to eating mode, so you try to grab your left fork and try to grab your right fork, you get hold of both forks. Okay? Then you get to eat. Okay? And each fork is shared with your neighbor. Okay, so there's only one fork here. So if this philosopher becomes hungry and that philosopher becomes hungry, only one of them is going to get to eat, and that's the one that grabs this fork first. Okay, this fork is a shared resource. Okay? So this is basically the problem you want to address. Okay, the problem is you want to be able to ensure, okay, that if a philosopher becomes hungry, eventually he or she will get to eat. If they just wait for the fork and never get the fork, they will starve. You don't want starvation. So once you become hungry, you are guaranteed that at some point you will get to eat, which means you will get both forks. Okay, so you want this property. And then the other property you want is to ensure that you can get both forks at the same time. You want to actually get both forks, only then do you get to eat. Okay, so basically eating involves two chopsticks, try to pick up both, and if any one is in use, then you will block. Okay, and after you are done eating, you put both the chopsticks down and you go back to thinking. Okay, this is the abstract problem. Now there is a reason that we are looking at this as a synchronization problem. Okay, so here, until now, all of the synchronization problems we studied had one shared resource. Okay, and there was contention on that shared resource. Multiple threads wanted to access that single resource, and you use locks or monitors or semaphores to guard that resource. Okay. This version of the synchronization problem has multiple shared resources. Okay. In particular, these two forks, the left fork and the right fork, are both shared resources, and you need to be able to grab both of them at the same time, okay, to make progress. Okay. And this causes contention. Okay, so now this is the abstract description. So first property is there are multiple shared resources, okay, rather than one. Okay, and you need to get mutually exclusive access to all the resources you care about. In this case, there are two, but in the general case, you could have n shared resources, and you need to get access to all of them in mutually exclusive mode in order to do something. Okay, so those are properties that make this synchronization problem different from the ones we looked at before. Okay, earlier ones had only single resource, okay, that was shared. Here multiple resources are shared. Not only are multiple resources shared, you need to get hold of multiple resources. Okay. Now, why does this arise in practice? Okay, there are many scenarios why in real systems where something like this actually occurs. So, it's a simple example where this actually, this problem came up from, where those of I/O devices. Okay, if you think of a printer, and then let's say there are threads that go and call the print command. Okay, you need to actually hold the printer in mutually exclusive mode, which is a shared resource, and there may be a print spool where there is a queue of jobs waiting. You need to basically lock the print spool, you need to lock the printer, take one job from the print spool and send that to the printer. And you need to have locks on both of these things. You need to have mutually exclusive access to the printer, you need to have mutually exclusive access to the spool. And multiple threads may be trying to add something to the spool, multiple threads may be trying to print, so you want access to both of these things. Okay. That was basically a scenario that got generalized into this notion of dining philosophers. Is the problem clear? Okay, so now we are going to look at how to solve this problem. Here is the simple attempt to solve it, which uses semaphores. So all this is doing is, it says let's wait on my left chopstick, wait on the right chopstick, and if I get hold of both, okay, wait basically blocks me if somebody is holding it, that chopstick. It's a binary semaphore. Okay. But if no one is holding it, I get my left chopstick, I get my right chopstick, and then I eat. Okay, then I give up my left chopstick, I give up my right chopstick, and then I go back to thinking. Yeah, so very simple solution. First try to get your left chopstick in mutually exclusive mode, then you try to get your right chopstick in mutually exclusive mode. Start eating if you've gotten both. And if any of them are in use, you will block until they become available, okay, by definition. And then once you're done, you release both your chopsticks. And you do this in a loop. Any comments on this solution? Yes.
Yeah, but if everybody grabs their left chopstick at the same time and waits for the right one, there's
going to
be a
deadlock. Right. So let's say all philosophers become hungry at the same time. Everyone reaches for their left chopstick, and everyone gets their left chopstick. And now you try to grab your right chopstick, okay? And everyone blocks. Because your right chopstick is somebody else's left chopstick and is already in use. So now what? You have this situation called a deadlock where nobody can progress. Okay, philosophers starve. They can never get to eat. Yes. Okay, so new solution is being proposed. It says don't just grab your left chopstick, try to grab both at the same time. Okay, and if you succeed, then somebody else blocks. Is that a good idea? If nobody gets a fork, then you know, somebody has to get a fork. Right. So, I mean, you have to ensure that there is no starvation. You have to ensure that somebody is going to get to eat. And if you are waiting, then when you become hungry, then eventually you want both your left and the right. Those are the correctness properties for the dining philosopher's problem. Clearly, just grabbing a left thing doesn't work, because everyone reaches for their left. Nobody gets there, right, and then you're stuck. Okay? So somehow you want a better solution, yes.
Did you assume that if two of them both take the left and right fork, there's only one fork left, and there's one philosopher with no fork?
Yeah.
Then you have to synchronize whoever takes that left fork, which is also moved.
Right. So here is a trivial solution. Okay. Protect all of these chopsticks with a global lock. Okay. Any philosopher that becomes hungry first gets the global lock and then finds whether there are chopsticks available, and if so, you grab the chopsticks and then unlock. Is that a good solution? Yes, no?
So one philosopher would have access to all the forks?
If you have a global lock, you will block everyone else. That's what global locks do. Yes?
No, if the one philosopher on one side of the table grabs all lock, then even the resources are available on the other side, but the guy can't grab it because...
Yep. If you have a global lock, you have no concurrency. Just as you had a problem in the reader-writer problem, so if this philosopher becomes hungry, okay, and that philosopher becomes hungry, this one gets the global lock, he gets both of those forks. Those forks are still available, but he holds a global lock. So nobody gets to eat, saying, tough, I have a global lock, stand in the queue. Yes?
If they're both available, take them both, but if only one is available, leave it?
Yes. So the point is, you have to check. Not just check for the first one and check for the second one. Okay. Because that will lead to a deadlock. We already saw that here. You check each in turn, you might get into a deadlock because everybody can check their left and then block everyone else. So the right solution has to check for both. Okay. And only if both are available do you grab it. If one is unavailable, then you wait. Okay. That has to be the solution. There is no other way to do it. So in other words, don't check for a fork at a time, check for all the resources you care about. If everyone is available, then go ahead and grab them all. Okay? If at least one is unavailable, if at least one is in use, then wait for it to become available. And keep checking.
That's with the global lock?
No, that's not a global lock. Global lock says block everyone, go ahead and check. Nobody else can even check.
But then, again, everybody could check.
Yes. So you basically, when you check for this and this, some other philosopher can check for that and that in parallel. You are just checking for the resources you care about. You are not blocking anyone else from checking for the resources they care about, which don't overlap with you. Okay. Yes. If you are checking this and this, then this philosopher may not be able to check for this. Okay, we'll look at that. But these two forks have nothing to do with these two. So that philosopher can check for those two in parallel and also grab them in parallel. A global lock would only allow one philosopher to do something at any time. Here, multiple philosophers can check so long as the resources you are checking don't overlap. If they are overlapping, then only one of those philosophers can do it.
How do you ensure that the neighboring philosopher doesn't check
that? Yes, so how do you ensure that? That's basically what the solution has to do. Okay, we have, so that somehow you want to ensure that if you are checking, somebody else who overlaps with you doesn't get to check. This is the monitor's version of the problem. I'll also show semaphore version. So this basically has this initialization code. So you set the state of each philosopher to be thinking. So you have thinking, hungry and eating. So what's, and this is basically the code for picking up your fork. And I says check for fork I. And this is the code for, I says I am philosopher I rather. Okay. So to pick up, you first change your state from thinking to hungry. Okay. You declare that you want to eat, so you go into the hungry state. Okay. And then you call this test function, which is right there. Okay. And what does the test function do? It basically says, is my right neighbor eating? Okay. And am I hungry? And is my left neighbor eating? My left neighbor already is eating and my right neighbor is eating. Then there is nothing I can do because they already grabbed their locks. So basically, you will not do anything. But if that condition is not true, which means my left neighbor is either thinking or hungry, or my right neighbor is, then you basically go into the eating mode. Means that my forks are available, so I will go into the eat mode. And that's basically... what you do. So here you check for that, and so what will happen is, if you come out of that saying both of those neighbors are eating, then you will wait. Okay. So that the testing is checking whether both my forks are available or not. Okay. If so, in the test, if both are available, you go ahead and grab it, and that essentially you grab by saying my state has now turned into eating because I checked my left and right are available, so I am going to start eating, which is equivalent to saying I actually grab those two forks. If you come out of there and your state is not eating, that means your neighbors are already eating. They have already gone ahead and grabbed their forks. Okay? So then you will wait. Okay? So the point is, you always should grab both forks, not one. Okay? That's why you are checking both for your left and right neighbors. There is no way for you to just grab one fork and wait for the other. Either it's all or nothing. You grab both forks or you grab nothing. Okay. So in that case, you either go into the eating state or you block. You don't grab one fork and say, I'm going to wait for the other. That's essentially what that solution is doing with that check. Okay. So there's a synchronized here which ensures that that check is done mutually exclusively and whatnot. Okay. In the put down, you basically go and release both of the, you go back to thinking mode and then you see if you can unblock your left neighbor and you see if you can unblock your right neighbor. Okay, so I am ready to put down my fork. I check, is my left neighbor waiting? Okay, so I call test with my left neighbor's ID, so it will again go and check if my left neighbor has both forks available. I just made my fork available to my left neighbor, but he or she has another fork. So that's what to grab. So that's what the test method will do. Okay, and can turn that philosopher from hungry to eating if both of their four, those fours are available. I do the same thing for my right neighbor. Okay. So when you pick it up, you basically check if both of the forks are available. If so, you go into eating state. If not, you go and block here. Okay. And when your neighbor is done, neighbor who was eating was done, they will try to unblock you. Okay, is that clear? Any questions about this? So it should be clear what changed between version 1 and version 2. Version 1 can have a deadlock because you are checking for each forks individually. So this can cause loops and waits, okay, because everyone can get one resource and then block for the other resource. Okay. We will formalize this notion of a deadlock next time when we study deadlocks as a topic. Okay. But this is the first time we have encountered a deadlock. So this is you get a condition called hold and wait. You're holding some resources, waiting for the others. Everyone is doing the same thing, so everyone ends up waiting forever. Okay. Here you check for all the resources you care about in one shot. Okay, and grab them all, or you grab none of those resources. Okay. This ensures that there will not be a deadlock. Okay, because you will never have a situation where you grab one of the forks and you will wait on the other. Either grab both or you go to sleep waiting for both. Any questions here? Okay, so here is the same code with the semaphores. Looks more complicated. It's really the same, essentially the same logic. Don't worry about all of that. This is the philosopher code. Is waiting in a loop. You are doing thinking, which means you don't do anything. You try to grab the forks. Okay, this method is says either acquire both forks or block. Essentially, what you did in monitors. Okay. If you grab both forks, go into eat, otherwise you will block there until you have both forks. Okay, when you come out of this method, you are guaranteed to have both forks. Okay, and then you eat, and then you put down the forks back on the table. Okay, so you sit in this loop. So these are the two key methods. Okay, which is how do you take the forks and how you put them back. So those are the two methods there. So the code is actually documented well. So first, so because this is semaphore, not monitors, you have to protect. You have a lock at the beginning and the end, which is equivalent to saying they are synchronized methods. Okay, so you first grab a lock, you change your state to hungry. Okay, and then you call this test method, which is the same thing that we encountered in monitors. You check, is the left guy eating, is the right guy eating? Okay, if none of them are eating, then you go ahead and change your state to eating, otherwise you will block here. Okay. So that's what you do, test there, and then there's up mutex that will exit the critical section, and then not block here, sorry, you block here, saying block, both forks are not acquired, then there's a semaphore for you which you block on. So when you put down the forks, it's the exact same code, okay, all written in semaphores. When you put it down, you change your state to thinking. Okay, now you see, can I unblock my left neighbor? Can I make him go from whatever hungry state to thinking? So you test your left, you test your right, so you can try to unblock both of them. Okay, and then you're done. Okay, is that clear? So the only important thing is when you try to unblock them, you also check whether they were even hungry to begin with. Okay? Because if they were not even, they are still in thinking mode, there is nothing to do. So which is why when you call them with your right, left argument, the first thing you do is my left neighbor hungry to begin with? Okay, it's the same test code that you called yourself, you called it for your left and right neighbors, and you will only do something if those two are even hungry to begin with. They are thinking there is nothing to do. Okay, which is the first thing you check is whether they are hungry. If they are hungry, then you see if both of the forks are available. If so, you go and do the right thing.
So when you said left, if the left fork is taken, why do you check the right one? You can't
see anyway. Yes, so you don't have to. Actually, this is C code, so if the condition fails, that it will not even go and check the right one. You'll, first time it fails, it will just stop any further check. This is how C works. Don't need to check. Is that clear or not clear what I just said? This is an AND, right? So this should be true and that should be true and that should be true. So the condition as a whole is going to fail in any case. C adds an additional optimization thing. The moment one condition fails, you don't even check what's to the right of you because you know it's going to fail. Okay, false and true will always be false. Okay, same code with semaphores. Any questions on this? Is the basic logic clear what is happening here? This can be generalized to N resources. Okay, dining philosopher goes from 1 to 2, there you have 2 forks. Okay? But it should be clear that now you can say there are N resources I care about. So your test should check, are all N available? If so, you grab them all. Okay? Otherwise, you have to go and block. Okay? And then somebody else has to make you unblock you to and check whether you can now grab those resources. Okay, that's the essential idea. Grabbing one at a time is problematic. Any questions? Okay, so do look at this code. There are some subtleties. The same is true of readers, writers. You need to have a careful understanding of exactly what synchronize does and what the read lock, the num readers does and num writers does and so on. Okay, so quick summary here. So we looked at two problems, right? So one is readers-writers problem, where you want readers to have concurrent access to the data and only one writer at a time. Okay? Our first solution favored readers. Our second solution doesn't really favor writers, but it makes it more fair. Okay? Unless done carefully, starvation is possible in this solution. Okay? And the good news is really you don't have to write that code. You can just use implementations of read-write locks which have dealt with this problem for you and have come up with starvation-free implementations. But it is important to understand what the problem is and how one goes about addressing the problem. Okay, so which is why we looked at it. And then we looked at dining philosophers, which is the only synchronization problem we have looked at here, where you care about multiple resources and mutually exclusive access to multiple resources. Okay, which is a frequently occurring problem in practice as well. Okay, in most cases, there's only one resource or one data structure you want to protect. Okay, in many cases, there may be multiple you want to access before you do something. Okay, so you can have this in scenarios like IO devices. You can have this in databases. Okay, so if you have multiple tables in a database and you have a query that tries to access multiple tables, you want to grab lock on both. Okay, the query can proceed only if when it has lock on both of those tables. Okay? An example of dining philosopher. In databases, you actually generalize to N. If a query touches N tables, you might actually have to grab locks on N tables. There may be multiple queries. Each query is like a philosopher. Okay? Multiple queries in the system, each of them wants some subset of locks. So you need to make sure that it's all or nothing. Okay? If any one lock is in use, the query has to block. Okay? Right? So this kind of problems occur frequently in practice, okay, so which is why we should know how to go about addressing them. Okay, and so important thing is to ensure concurrency. When locks or resources don't conflict, access to them is allowed in parallel, but when they conflict, then you block. So this is the last lecture on synchronization. Okay. On Thursday we are going to start our discussion of deadlocks. Okay. As far as the first exam is concerned, this is the material that we will actually use for that exam. Okay. Deadlocks won't be covered for exam 1. Okay. It's not a reason to ignore deadlocks because it will be covered for exam 2. Okay. But as far as your first one is concerned, we will just stop here. Okay, first 10 lectures is what we will use as material for the exam that we are going to have in like two or so weeks. Okay, so we'll stop here. There is a discussion section tomorrow where the TA will discuss the lab assignment further. Okay, if you have questions, come with question. He's going to come and give, have some additional discussion of how you can get started.